Because of a complication with my typical recording schedule, the release of this podcast got pushed back a couple more days than I meant for it to. But overall, I had a pretty good week. There was some good stuff in the last 7 days or so, but it's not as good of a week as Travis Kelce had. We'll talk about his contract, his reality show, and much more towards the end of this episode of Roughing the Kicker here on Arrowhead Addict. I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe. You can always get in touch with me at JB Briscoe on Twitter. I cannot wait to talk about Travis Kelce. And I know he's a very polarizing figure, at least on this podcast or with the people who tweet at me. So I'm excited to hear everyone's thoughts on that. But we're also going to talk about the Chiefs offensive coordinator situation, some early looks at free agency and the draft, and a bunch of other news and notes around the Chiefs. If this goes well, maybe at the very end of the show, I'll throw in a Super Bowl prediction while we're at it. We'll even take a quick look at Peyton Manning, a report that he's going to retire after the Super Bowl, another report that a certain team who just relocated might be interested in his services for the 2016 season. All that and much, much more on this episode of Roughing the Kicker. This news had broke as of the release of the last episode of this show, but I kicked it back to this episode because that episode was completely packed with Chiefs-Patriots stuff. So let's look at the timeline here and the real-time reaction as we start to unpack this. Originally, the Kansas City Chiefs, as Doug Peterson left, the offensive coordinator for the Chiefs, Doug Peterson, left to be the head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles, which since then the Eagles have been spending a lot of money on keeping their own potential free agents, which I think is interesting. And I don't know if that's Doug Peterson led. I would say that, especially because they've signed both of their tight ends, Zach Ertz and Brent Celek, that Doug Peterson really is going to try to emulate a lot of Andy Reid's ideas, locking down two tight ends early, which is the reason the Chiefs locked down their best tight end, talk about towards the end of the show. But so, Peterson leaves, and the Chiefs install Brad Childress as offensive coordinator with the departure of Doug Peterson. Brad Childress had been the spread game analyst, consultant, something like that, spent all of his time in the box during the last few Chiefs seasons. And at the time, my thought process was, I'm cool with this. He's experienced. He keeps the rising quarterback and running back coaches in place, because that was where the talk was originally, that Andy Reid really liked Eric Bellamy, the running backs coach, and Matt Nagy, the quarterbacks coach. Keeps them in place, shouldn't keep continue to move the offense forward, continues to elevate the offense that started to look better in the last, I don't know, two-thirds of the season. Well, since then, the Chiefs announced that Matt Nagy, and I'm probably still pronouncing his name wrong, so if someone knows I'm saying it wrong, you can tweet me at JB Briscoe. Andy Reid has announced that Matt Nagy and Brad Childress will be co-offensive coordinators. And Reid went into some detail trying to explain what that would look like, but it's a very strange... I cannot think of another time where a format like this has been in effect. Now, Brad Childress is going to stay in the box, and Nagy will stay on the sidelines. It sounds like Andy Reid is going to go back to calling most of the plays, and strangely enough, as we found out in the postseason, and as Doug Peterson said in one of his intro interviews in Philadelphia, since the Steelers game, Andy Reid had been calling the plays in the first half, and Peterson had been calling the plays in the second half. I would have bet the other way around just based off of my own presuppositions about Andy Reid, because the Chiefs' offense in the second half got too conservative, got scared. Usually they were playing with a lead going into halftime, but the adjustments very rarely worked, very frequently became a more timid-looking offense in the second half. Well, apparently the guy who was in charge of calling those plays is now the head coach of a different team. So I think that is a very interesting development that might mean an overall addition by subtraction for the Chiefs. Doug Peterson did a lot of good things with this offense. Don't get me wrong. He took some big steps. This offense took some big steps with Doug Peterson here. I can't say that it was because of Doug Peterson that the offense improved. It might have been simply Andy Reid and Alex Smith continuing to get more and more on the same page. But he was a part of it. Regardless, here's a quote from Andy Reid in a statement announcing the two coordinators. Quote, "We went through our process of finding an offensive coordinator and determined that having Coach Childress and Coach Nagy serve as co-coordinators would benefit our football team the most. They both have a great feel for our system. Brad lends a tremendous amount of experience and knowledge to our offense. Matt has done a nice job tutoring the quarterbacks the last 3 years and will continue to work with the QBs, but will also take the next step in his professional growth and coordinate the offense with Brad. His feel for the game and well-thought-out ideas each week have impressed me." And Joel Thorman on Arrowhead Pride pointed out that, or just said, it feels like a too many cooks in the kitchen situation. And I can't possibly disagree for that, or disagree with that. And also the idea that, halves got split up last year with Doug Peterson makes me wonder if that's going to be in play here at all. I hope it's not. And I hope that Reed, Nagy, and Childress can all blend together to create a more advanced, you know, three heads are better than one game plan. Adjustments can be more hands-on with the players when they need to be. But I've never seen anything like this before. I can't think of a case anywhere else in the NFL. I can't even think of a case from a major college team where they said, and collegiately might be different. I don't have as much of a feel for college football for sure. But I can't think of any situation with a professional team where they had co-coordinators. Like, that's redundant because co-coordinator. You're adding a position that didn't exist before. And might that be a good idea? Maybe this is what people said whenever, you know, the head coach hired an offensive and defensive coordinator. I'm not sure. But for now, I'm withholding judgment. I'm really glad that all those guys are still around. It limits the impact of the loss of Doug Peterson. The offense isn't going to go through any major changes. These guys have been dictating this offense for the last few years. Keeping them together because the offense, we've seen such growth with the offense in the last season especially, is a positive. It's a good thing. Might it end up being a too-many-cook situation? I think it absolutely has that potential. But Andy Reid, in another statement, had some things to say that kind of limit my fears there a little bit. This is all from Andy Reid. We'll keep Brad in the box upstairs, which I said earlier, and then Matt will go ahead and come down to the field, which I said earlier. Matt will do the coach-to-quarterback headset, Reid said on Thursday. As far as duties go, we'll see how that all plays out. Right now, they're just splitting them up, and we're working through that, so there's plenty there to work with. These quotes coming via Arrowhead Pride through a bunch of other outlets. Childress also had a couple of quotes here. He said, it's not like a three-man, everybody speaking in the microphone at once when the play comes up situation. I mean, all that stuff kind of gets worked out beforehand. Situationally, it's on your game plan that way. You have choices on that menu, but we're going to spend enough time together that we're probably going to be able to finish each other's sentences. I doubt that a tiny bit, but I'm hopeful for it. I think the more important thing here to realize is that this co-coordinator system is going to be most obvious to them at the time in the game plan situation. Pre-game, game week, that's whenever that's going to come together. They're going to organize the game plan, and then it seems like for the most part, Nagy and Reid calling the plays, Nagy to the quarterback, will be the consistent format, at least to start, with actually getting the play in. Now, my final concern with it is that we have seen the coach-to-quarterback system take too long, especially with complicated play calls. I would rather see the guy calling the plays be the one to put it into Alex Smith's ear. It concerns me that we might see, you know, Childress to Reid, Reid to Nagy, Nagy to Smith. That process is going to take 20 seconds. Can you get that play into the huddle and then lined up and then give Smith time to look around? I don't know. That concerns me. They're going to have to get that process streamlined. I would not be at all surprised to see that change at some point during the season if they can't get those plays called quickly enough. I'd also like to see Alex Smith have an opportunity to call more plays on his own, as we would have loved to have seen in the last 2 minutes of that Patriots game. Before we jump into our next topic, I want to spend just a minute talking about how you can support this show in a bunch of different ways. First of all, make sure you subscribe to Roughing the Kicker on iTunes or any podcast subscribing app on Android. Search Roughing the Kicker, you'll find it. The AA Radio one has been having some issues lately, which is why I'm talking about this earlier in the show today. I haven't been able to upload the show through AA Radio's iTunes feed for the last few weeks. So, Roughing the Kicker on iTunes, subscribe to that one. Get every episode as soon as it comes out. It usually comes out almost a full day ahead of when the Arrowhead Addict page is posted. So there's that. You can follow me on Twitter at JB Briscoe. We can have conversations there. Or on Facebook, facebook.com/RTK Show. Good way to send longer messages and longer questions. And I'm going to be relying on that a lot this offseason. It's hard to do a weekly show in the dead of June. So your questions, your conversation topics are going to drive this show throughout the entire offseason. Both of those places are good ways to get to me there. And also, hopefully, I'm going to be able to bring on some guests to talk about whatever may come across the table this offseason. I'm going to be able to do that because of your financial support, typically done through Patreon. patreon.com/RTK, patreon.com/RTK. You can donate a little bit of money there on a monthly basis, $5, $10, $20. If you want to sponsor the show for some reason, you have something you want to promote, you can either just throw some money there or you can message me on the Facebook page or tweet me. If you'd like to support this show on a one-time basis, tweet me again or Facebook message me and I'll give you a PayPal address that you can send money to. That's what some of the people on this list here among Patreon supporters, Randy Singh at Randy_Singh_ did the PayPal thing. Don Beal at DonBeal32, Andy Simpson, Stephen Smith, Derek Vaughn at D_Vaughn88. Those people all either threw $20 in my direction for 1 month or are in the $20 group on Patreon.com. Cannot thank you guys enough. $10 group, Christine Roadlander at C Roadlander on Twitter, and Ty Declare at Ty Declare 44 have been around forever supporting this show. And then Josh Beadle in the $5 group. Everybody there is helping support this show in a huge way. It costs some money to keep this show on iTunes, this beautiful microphone that brings out my natural, manly radio voice. And then hopefully the ability to bring on guests over the off season into next year. I'm going to have to figure out the logistics of that. And whenever I do, the money that you guys throw to this show is what's going to make that be able to happen. So thank you all for supporting the show that way. Make sure you subscribe to iTunes on iTunes or your Android app to the Roughing the Kicker feed specifically. And now I'm done with the self-promotion and the thanking. New topic! Let's kick off our, probably are going to be our most frequent topic of this offseason, our first look at the Chiefs free agents. Therese Paylor on KansasCity.com, writer for the Kansas City Star, has a really good breakdown here that I'm going to use to kind of guide this conversation. He also has some great comments from Joel Corey, an NFL cap analyst, and he ranks the most important players here. So we'll just start at the top, and then I'll chime in, obviously, with my own personal opinions on it, because that's, I guess, why I do this show. First on the list, safety Eric Berry. Paylor writes that Berry, 27, is the story of the year in the NFL, beating lymphoma, made the Pro Bowl, first-team All-Pro. Corey, though, says that Berry, whose rookie contract has expired, has a strong case for a large payday. Quote, after his surprisingly fast recovery where there hasn't been a drop-off in his play, he's going to be looking to get paid at the top of the safety market, Corey said. That's New England's Devin McCourty at about $28.5 million guaranteed, or Seattle's Earl Thomas around $27.72 million guaranteed. Paylor speculates that if the Chiefs and Berry can't get on the same page, we could be looking at a franchise tag situation for Eric Berry with a little, currently the number, according to Paylor, is a $153.4 million salary cap in 2016. That's a speculation. Corey said that tagging Berry would result in a $10.7 million cap hit. Paylor then goes on to say that the first-year cap number could be as low as $3.5 million, depending on how it's structured, according to Joel Corey. If the Chiefs want to pay Eric Berry, they should give him a long-term deal. At this point, and I know this is an unpopular opinion, I'm going to try to justify it. At this point, he is not the top priority for me with this Chiefs team. He's been very good in his time with the Chiefs. His comeback story has been unbelievable. And the Chiefs have a lot on the table, though, this offseason. And Eric Berry is one, if you have to pick a safety in the NFL to get up to fill a hole to stop a run that he shouldn't be responsible for but will stop after 3 yards anyway, you can make an argument for Eric Berry being your first pick. He's an incredible closer. He plays like a deep linebacker sometimes, in a good way. But he's not Devin McCourty or Earl Thomas in pass defense. He took a couple of steps forward, I would argue, this year in his pass defending game. But that is not his strength. And with how the NFL is currently operating, if the Chiefs can keep their run defense improving, which I think was going to involve Jay Howard sticking around and probably Derek Johnson sticking around, this is not what the Chiefs need to be spending their money on. They need to figure out what they're going to do with Sean Smith, we'll talk about it in a little bit, and they have a lot of question marks in that secondary. The future of Tyvon Branch, Hussein Abdullah, Eric Berry. There are very few lockdown definite answers currently in that secondary. And Hussein Abdullah is criminally underrated on this Chiefs team. Criminally underrated. Ron Parker is locked up. He has been somehow also underrated in the middle of an unbelievable season. If you want to look back and give underrated MVPs out to this team, which maybe I'll do at some point, I just thought of it just now. I think Ron Parker is the guy. And Hussein Abdullah has an argument, but he was obviously hurt for a large chunk of the season. Ron Parker, I would say, is the underrated MVP of this team. The guy who was so impactful in so many different ways. Not only did he save the Chiefs in slot coverage for a lot of this season, he played very well from the safety position. Ron Parker should never be an outside cover corner, because he can't do that. But at safety and his performance at slot corner, or covering the slot guy, A+ this season. Fantastic year from Ron Parker. That extension looks fantastic right now. But Parker's locked down, and that's about it. It's about just Ron Parker in the secondary. Obviously, Marcus Peters on the other side. Phillip Gaines has some time left, but he was injured for a lot of the season. Steven Nelson on a rookie deal. Obviously, he didn't have that much of an impact this season at all. I don't think you can start off by giving Barry a large chunk of the secondary budget, if you will. And then the secondary budget, it constantly ballooning in the NFL. The pass rush and the secondary, arguably the two most important. I mean, quarterback, pass rush, and secondary might be your most important units. But the trenches are also obviously super impactful. I would not go to Eric Berry first. I would not make him the first deal we worked out. Although it's going to be hard then to work out a long-term deal if you've given cap space to other players. But Eric Berry, I think his strengths can be covered by strengthening the middle of the defense. And his weaknesses are things that Hussein Abdullah and Ron Parker do very well. Even Tyvon Branch has done very well. I hate the idea of Ron Parker, of Eric Berry playing somewhere else. And, you know, maybe you talk about him going back to Tennessee where he played in college, going to the Titans or something like that. That would make sense because he's been in Tennessee. I would even hate for him to go to an irrelevant team because I think he deserves to play on a good football team. And I would hate for him to stay in the AFC. But at this point, I'm not giving Eric Berry a big contract, at least not at first. If you fill up the rest of the holes on the team and then you feel like you can still pay Berry whatever he's asking for to keep him around, I'm all for it. But the next guy on this list, inside linebacker, Derek Johnson. Terrez Paylor writes, if Berry is the heart of this defense, Johnson, 33, is the soul. Both were elected defensive captains in the playoffs, an indication of their value to the team and their leadership. Corey said that the Chiefs should hope Johnson is willing to play for the same $5.25 million he made in 2015. The top of the inside linebacker market was set by the Jets' David Harris, just over a year younger than Johnson, when he signed a three-year $21.5 million deal with $15 million guaranteed last March. Corey said, a better comparison is Cleveland's Carlos Dansby, who was 33 when he signed a four-year $24 million contract with $12 million guaranteed. Derek Johnson, for some reason, I cannot get like the word old out of my head here, and partially because coming back from the injury, there's a lot of question of how long he wants to play. I cannot, if anybody shocked me as much as Eric Berry this year, playing healthily, playing well, looking good, it's Derek Johnson. Derek Johnson looked like a different player, like a better player. He looked better than when he did before he got hurt. I don't know if it was a year of rest in that rehab process or what, but Derek Johnson was fantastic on the field, between the lines. We're not just saying, what a great leader, what a great character guy, like you start to say about veteran players as they start to decline. Say, well, it's okay that we're still paying him this much money because he's a good mentor. That's not the case with Derek Johnson. We don't have to, that's true, I'm sure, but we don't have to say that because he was so good on the field. I'm totally willing to pay Derek Johnson in the same market as four years might be too many, but you give that, you take the division of a four-year, $24 million deal with $12 million guaranteed, and then maybe that ends up being 6-6 for those first 2 years, or 5-5 with $2 million in cap money if you don't want to keep him for the third. Basically giving like a team option, if you want to equate it to different sports, like a team option for the fourth year for Derek Johnson, I'd line up with that just fine. $5 to $6 million a year for DJ, I would do it at this point. Again, not just because he's been so good, like the next guy that I'm going to talk about, but because he was so good last season. They are not going to franchise Derek Johnson, by the way. $14 million for an inside linebacker, not worth it. Next on the list from Terrez Paylor, outside linebacker Tom Bahali. He's 32, took a pay cut to stay with the Chiefs last season, and Paylor writes that he played through knee issues, recording 6.5 sacks and making the Pro Bowl again. Bahali has some interesting things in his contract that Corey talks about in this article, about voidable years, a hit the Chiefs would take if they can't work out a deal with him, but that doesn't come around until March 4th. I think the Chiefs are going to get a deal done with Holly. John Dorsey had some comments about D Ford, saying he's happy with how he's improved. He needs to add another move, be able to beat a different kind of pass blocking, be able to be more consistent in the run. I think it's going to continue to happen. But in the NFL right now, as we certainly saw throughout this season with the Chiefs, where Holly and Houston both had injuries and D Ford had to play across both of them and then mostly across from Holly. In the NFL, if you can have three pass rushers that you trust even a little bit, you've got it. You want to keep them around so badly. I would hate for D Ford to spend his third season as like a backup third option. I don't think we're going to see that happen. I think we're going to see Ford and Holly continue to rotate for specific situations and keep Holly fresh, where he will never practice every day of the week ever again for as long as he's in the NFL, which is totally fine by me. I think the Chiefs are going to pay Tamba Holly. I think we might see them the Chiefs give him a 2-year deal, even keep him around, keep this pass rush together. You're already paying Justin Houston huge money. D Ford, you're paying almost nothing as far as rookies go and how the cap is played out. Pay Tamba Holly, keep those three guys together. The Chiefs should do that. I think they will. Next might be the most interesting one, which is cornerback Sean Smith. And I got a couple of tweets from D_Vaughn88. So what's your opinion on putting the franchise tag on Sean Smith? He said it'd be a little over $13 million to do that, leaving roughly $20 million to lock everybody down. And Vaughn said, I'd rather tag Barry if it came down to it. I just said, I do not want to see the Chiefs tag Eric Berry. So let's talk about Sean Smith here. Smith's 28. The Chiefs gave him a 3-year, $18 million contract before the 2013 season, as Paylor points out here. And then the quarterback market exploded. And Sean Smith is going to be looking for some big, big money here. Joel Corey points back to Brian Maxwell's contract, $10.5 million per year, $25 million fully guaranteed from the Philadelphia Eagles last offseason. Corey then goes on to talk about how he says he thinks Sean Smith is looking at Maxwell's contract and going, I'm better than Brian Maxwell, which I would agree with. And Corey goes on then to say that Oakland might be a good fit for Sean Smith, who could keep his first-year cap hit low, and then it would blow up. He said maybe $3.5 million the first year, and then about $12 million in 2017. He thinks he's going to Oakland. And I think that would make sense. That would be a good fit. But $12 million a year for a guy who is on the other side of his prime, you would probably say. The Chiefs have an established young corner who you expect to continue to improve with Marcus Peters. But what I just said about pass rushers, you've got to have three. It's the same way with corners who you can really trust. Phillip Gaines was a slot corner and then was an outside corner for about two games while Sean Smith was suspended before he got hurt. I don't remember if Gaines got injured in the second or third game. I think he might have gotten injured in the third game. But he was a slot corner. Then the Chiefs drafted Steven Nelson to be a slot corner. Nelson did not play very well this year. Gaines got injured, put on IR very early. So there's a lot of questionable variables here. I wouldn't mind even paying Sean Smith the $14 million that you would have to give him with a franchise tag this year, which approaching $14 million, around $13 million from the different sources. I wouldn't completely loathe that, although it would really handicap the Chiefs in a pretty big way for what they can do with the cap number. You're not going to be able to franchise Sean Smith and sign Eric Berry. Although if Barry's number stayed very low this first year and then escalated next year, which is how it would probably work anyway, you might be able to work around that. The cap is very confusing to try to keep a full grasp on. But franchising Smith would keep the long-term burden away of trying to figure out how you're going to pay him this much money for 3 or 4 years, especially if you don't trust him fully because of the DUI, maybe thinking he's declining. He's only 28, but maybe that's what you think. I don't know. But keeping around for 1 year gives you another season of lockdown performance on that other side across from Marcus Peters. Maybe you start to work in Gaines or start to see if you can trust Gaines as an outside guy. Give Steven Nelson time to catch up to the NFL as a slot corner, if the Chiefs even still believe in Steven Nelson. And then Smith walks after next season. Gaines moves opposite Peters. Nelson steps into the full-time slot corner. And you have to have some other young guys and a couple other veterans who you can trust in that rotation, because Jamel Fleming and Marcus Cooper are not cutting it. But that format, that look for next year and that look for down the future, I'm pretty comfortable with. If they don't franchise Sean Smith, I don't see them giving him a long-term deal at this point. But I wouldn't hate it if they did. You've got to be able to trust your outside corners. Now, we're probably looking at an AFC West with an aging Phillip Rivers, with a rising Derek Carr, and a question mark in Denver next year. So the divisional need for the secondary might not be as high as you would think. But to win in the NFL, you've got to have a secondary that you can trust. And one superstar isn't enough anymore. Because if Marcus Peters locks down the guy on his side of the field, remember, Bob Sutton does not flip his corners. If you come in to Kansas City with Demaryius Thomas, Marcus Peters will not follow Demaryius Thomas. He'll just switch sides. Thomas will. Peters won't. You can trust Marcus Peters to lock down one side of the field if you think you can. I personally think he'll be there soon. In the NFL, you're going to just go to the other guy. Even if you have a slot corner you really like, fine, you cover up. You think Philip Gaines is going to lock down whoever's playing the slot in that given case, Andre Caldwell or something. Great, knock him out of the situation. And then you have to help your other opposite corner. In this case, I don't know who that would be for the Chiefs. If it's not Sean Smith, it's no one. It should not be Ron Parker. It cannot be Marcus Cooper or Jamel Fleming. And if it's a guy that you don't trust, then your safety help has to go over to that guy. And if that's what's going on, you're leaving very little safety net for your slot corner, for Marcus Peters, for the run game, because you have to devote your extra attention to that negative matchup there. And opposing quarterbacks and offensive coordinators know that that's happening. And if Marcus Peters isn't going to switch sides ever, then you can put your best receiver up against your worst outside corner or against your slot corner, like the Cardinals did with Larry Fitzgerald a lot of times. That's a hard thing to keep up against. You've got to be able to trust both of your outside corners, in my mind. If you're not going to keep Sean Smith, I think we might see the Chiefs draft another corner in the first round this year. Another guy who they expect to step in early, get tested early, and have got to step up, will have to step up, and perform almost immediately. I think we can see the Chiefs pay their defensive line, pay the pass rush, as they already have done with Justin Houston, and they've invested there with Dee Ford. I think they can pay the safety position, as they've already done with Ron Parker. Maybe Eric Berry, you bring back Tyvon Branch and Hussein Abdullah, and then you're going to have to take a risk at your corner spots, which is not where I like to take the risks if I can help it. The risk paid off in a huge way with Marcus Peters. You've got him on a rookie deal for several years, and he keeps improving. And this is something where I think, to take a quick aside here, I think it's really easy for a lot of fans to look at these numbers, look at this offseason stuff, especially in baseball, but even with football, to look at this stuff and go, it's not my money, why do I care? Why do I care if a player is getting $30 million guaranteed over this stretch of time? It doesn't matter, I don't care about that. Pay the guy, make a good team. Well, in the NFL, the way the cap works is important, if not to fully understand, to understand that it is important. With that knowledge, you can understand that you're putting together a puzzle of money here. Every team only has so much that they can spend. It's not an issue of an owner choosing not to spend money, except for some teams. But the Chiefs are not in that place. Clark Hunt is not doing that, because we see the Chiefs continue to spend and spend and spend. You have to understand, if not the inner workings of the cap, you have to understand that the cap is important, because you have to build the team within that. It's why teams like Washington struggled for so many years. It's why teams who have a cheap quarterback, like the Seahawks did before they paid Russell Wilson, or how the Ravens won a Super Bowl with Joe Flacco before his big deal. If your quarterback is cheap, you have more money to put elsewhere on your team. Your quarterback has to be cheap and performing. The Chiefs don't have a cheap quarterback. They have an expensive quarterback. So they have to figure out other places where they can pay more cheaply, which usually happens in draft picks. The way I see this unfolding right now, to that point, is the Chiefs are going to try to go cheap with their corners. And not cheap in a bad way, but young and draft picks. Marcus Peters, cheap. Steven Nelson and Phillip Gaines, cheap and young. That other guy, if you invest in Sean Smith, you lose that ability to say, all right, we've got a cheap secondary. You've already paid Ron Parker, but maybe you let Eric Berry go. Cheap, young, talented, coin flip secondary. If it hits, you win a Super Bowl. If it misses, you pick in the top 10. That's how important the secondary is in the NFL, but so far, what the Chiefs have done with their secondary has worked. You give Bob Sutton a good pass rush, and you trust him to put the pieces together in the secondary, I can live with that. So to that end, I think Sean Smith will probably end up walking here, but I wouldn't hate investing in him at least as that one-year franchise deal, to let Philip Gaines and Steven Nelson and some other guys. There will be new corners on this team. Marcus Cooper and Jamel Fleming are not going to be valuable pieces of this defense. Special teams, maybe. Defensively, not a chance. I think we see the Chiefs draft a corner in the first three rounds again, no question, and probably bring in a kind of a mid-level free agent, especially if they let Sean Smith go. Next on the list, defensive tackle Jay Howard. Jay Howard is going to either go somewhere else and make some nice money, this is in my opinion, or he's going to get paid here, and the Chiefs are probably going to have to let Dontari Poe walk after 2016. And then Paylor goes on to write similarly to this. So the Chiefs already handed defensive end Alan Bailey a four-year, $24 million extension in fall 2014, which, by the way, looks like a fantastic deal to me. And most teams can't afford three well-paid interior linemen. Corey said, you either have to be resigned to the fact that you're either going to lose Dontari Poe, who's going to be very expansive, or you could try to get cute, Corey said. Corey said the top free agent interior defensive lineman last year was Dan Williams, who got $25 million over 4 years from Oakland. Corey said the cost of franchise Howard will approach $13 million, which isn't unreasonable, but the transition tender is a little more palatable. Which isn't reasonable. The transition tender is a little more palatable. It was $9.3 million a year ago. A transition tag, Paylor writes, would allow Howard to negotiate a contract with any club and give the Chiefs a chance to match it. Howard could test his worth on the market, maximize his value, and give the Chiefs an outside chance at keeping a very strong interior defensive line together. Poe is a free agent after 2016. I think Jay Howard could make an argument that he performed as well as any lineman on the Chiefs' defensive line this year, including Dontari Poe. Will Poe continue to improve? I think so, but there's also a little bit of a thought I've heard from some people around media that say, I think Dontari Poe is a little bit overrated. I can see that. He's got incredible tools, but he hasn't gotten the penetration as a pass rusher in the last season, really. His run defense and his ability to eat up a couple of guys was fantastic, but that pressure up the middle seemed to be lacking in most cases this game, if you kind of think back about it off the top of your head. And if you think of some reason that I'm wrong, tweet me or whatever. But Jay Howard, I feel like, has been more involved in the interior pass rush, if not just as involved with the interior run defense. You're going to have to pick one. I could see the Chiefs paying Jay Howard here and then basically admitting that Poe's going to play one last year here and then he's going to leave. If that's the move the Chiefs want to make, you lock up one of them. I think you need to lock up one of them now. This offseason, they either need to pay Jay Howard and then go one more year of Dontari Poe before he walks, or pay Dontari Poe and then Jay Howard walks immediately. At this point, I would be able to easily make an argument for that first situation because you have both of them this upcoming season. If you pay Poe and let Howard go, You're going Dontari Poe and a free agent or a rookie or Raheem Nunez-Roches trying to make him active and on the field, which he's not ready for. I'd like to see them keep both these guys together. Then Alan Bailey and Jay Howard are the two guys locked up long-term for the Chiefs. Dontari Poe has one more year. Then we see how that goes from there. A few smaller free agents and then a couple of guys looking at restructuring potentially. One I think is the most important by far of this kind of other category. Jeff Allen, he's 26. The Chiefs went 11-1 once he returned to the starting lineup after he got hurt in the preseason, as Paylor points out here. And he also says, the Chiefs regime has shown a tendency to let offensive linemen walk. Guards John Osamoa and Jeff Schwartz both left in free agency in 2014. Then Corey, at the end of this, gives an approximation of about $4 million per year in a multi-year deal for Jeff Allen. The Chiefs' offensive line changed so much when Allen returned. It was the word nastiness or some fight in the offensive line really showed up whenever Jeff Allen returned, and I like him best at guard, although he has some right tackle ability. Eric Fisher, who improved throughout the entire season, got better whenever Jeff Allen was playing next to him. For $4 million, I understand, Everett, you've got to decide where you're spending the money here, and spending money on a guard is something that makes people hesitant, especially, I'll talk about Ben Grubbs for a second in just a moment. I understand you don't want to throw a bunch of money into guards. The Chiefs didn't throw money at Evan Mathis in the offseason. It turned out to work out fine, although Evan Mathis is about to play in the Super Bowl. He hasn't had that good of a season. the Chiefs need to give, if it's 3 years, $12 million for Jeff Allen, please do it. The Chiefs just gave Ja Reed exactly that contract, 3 years, $12 million. And Reed can play guard, Reed can be a swing tackle, he's versatile, I'm cool with it. Pay Jeff Allen. It's not just for the fact that he played very well at left guard, but what he did for the Chiefs offensive line as an entire unit. I will be excited when the Chiefs sign a guard if that guard is Jeff Allen. Chase Daniel, I think, is gone. Donald Stevenson, I think, is gone. If either of those things turn out to be wrong, I'll get on here and go, oh, didn't see that coming, and we'll talk about that contract. I think they're both gone. Then Paylor and Corey talk about, quote, decision time. Looking at Jamal Charles, Corey says the Chiefs could try to take away Charles' $2 million reporting bonus, reporting to training camp, and try to turn it into incentives so the Chiefs can take $2 million off of their cap because he's coming back from multiple ACL injuries. He's older now. Corey thinks the Chiefs are going to try to get him to take a pay cut this year. The Chiefs' running game got better without Jamal Charles. Not that Jamal Charles, please don't hear me say this, not that Jamal Charles was causing any issues in the Chiefs' run game, but the run game was very good even without him. It got better without him, I would argue, for reasons beyond Jamal Charles personally. But Weston Ware played very well. They're not tied to Jamal Charles like they have been in years past. If he can take a pay cut and stick around, that would be great for the Chiefs, but he also is not leaving this team, no question. Ben Grubbs, who the Chiefs paid last year, traded for a fifth-round pick. I love the trade at the time. He's going to be hit with a cap number of $4.2 million. If he retires, the Chiefs pay $4.2 million. His 2016 cap number is $6.3 million. The Chiefs could save $2.1 by cutting him. Joel Corey is leaning towards him being a guy that maybe restructures his deal. He says, he was making a ton of money in New Orleans, so you've got to hope he's a guy who says, I've made a ton of money, I'm willing to work the team a little bit. I sure hope so, because Ben Grubbs was bad and then got hurt. And then getting stuck with $4 million, that 4.2, if he retires, would be a tough pill to swallow. But I don't know if Ben Grubbs wants to try to come. Neck injuries and head injuries mess with players, as they should. Like, not that that's a criticism. But I could see really, really kind of reassessing where you want to be, especially because of how CTE is impacting how players look at football. Calvin Johnson reportedly said that he's planning on retiring. I don't know if that's part of it, if he wants to leave Detroit, but there are guys leaving the league for those reasons. Just interesting to keep an eye on where Ben Grubbs goes. This article, I believe, was written before Travis Kelce signed his extension. We'll talk about it in a little bit. My favorite, and we're going to talk about Dontari Poe. My favorite theory here that is going to make some people furious, and I will be totally happy with, let's talk about Eric Fisher. I said in the preseason that I thought Eric Fisher was going to have a breakout season, continuing to improve on where he's been. I thought playing next to Ben Grubbs would be beneficial. Well, it ended up being playing next to Jeff Allen was the most beneficial thing for Eric Fisher. He looked good in the preseason, was hurt at the beginning of the year. A lot of, in my mind, unjust criticism, questioning how injured he was, if he wanted to try to block J.J. Watt or not. He got moved to right tackle. Whenever he moved back from left tackle, the Chiefs didn't lose a game until they played the Patriots in New England. They won every regular season game with Eric Fisher at left tackle. Here's what Paylor writes, and then I'll give you my thought that's going to probably make some people angry. The Chiefs have until May 3rd to execute a fifth-year option on Fisher, which Corey suspects will be anywhere between $11.5 and $12 million for 2017. The option is guaranteed for injury, so if Fisher, 25, doesn't get hurt, the Chiefs could cut him any time until the first day of the new league year in March 2017 and eliminate the cap charge. I think Eric Fisher is on the up-and-up. I think Eric Fisher is improving. I think the Chiefs are going to need to pay or to draft a right tackle to let Eric Fisher start to slip away. The left side of the offensive line was very consistent with Fisher and Jeff Allen. Mitch Morse comes back. He could play center. Talk about something a little bit about Zach Fulton maybe playing center and then letting Mitch Morse move to guard. You cannot let your one tackle go here, but giving an option for the next season for $11.5 or $12 million feels like a lot. Although I think there's a good chance because they could cut him before March 2017 and cut the charge out completely. With that knowledge, I could see them giving him the option and then restructuring it or giving him a long-term deal in there somewhere. But if I'm the Chiefs, ready? Drumroll. I give Eric Fisher an extension right now. This offseason, I would pay Eric Fisher long-term. Get that yearly number down. I think he's going to have a better year next year, and I might be nuts, but I said that this year, and I ended up being right about it. One thing I was right about. I think he's going to continue to improve. I think you need to pay him to be your left tackle of the future before he demands top-shelf left tackle money. Will he ever be a Pro Bowl left tackle? Probably not. Maybe not. Will he be a top 10 left tackle for the next three seasons? I'd say yes. I think he is right now. I think Eric Fisher right now is a top 10 left tackle in football. Or if he's not right now, if you want to put him at the top 15, the top half of the league, no question. I believe the status, he didn't have a holding penalty as a left tackle this season. Pay Eric Fisher, lock down your left tackle spot without paying premium left tackle money. Give yourself that cap flexibility the Chiefs need right now. Don't worry about the options for the future. Lock him down at a rate that you like, if at all possible, for 3 or 4 or 5 years with restructuring capabilities down the road. I think you can put together a pretty team-friendly deal to give Eric Fisher some long-term money. We just saw with Travis Kelce, he took a team-friendly deal because it guarantees money that he wasn't going to get yet. Give Eric Fisher money that he's not going to get yet, guarantee it out a little ways, get that number down, the overall number and the yearly number, pull it down by giving extra years. Keep Eric Fisher at left tackle for the foreseeable future here. I know it's hard to pay offensive linemen sometimes, especially paying for him and Jeff Allen. But you know what's harder? Winning with a terrible offensive line. Winning football games with a bad offensive line is an impossible task. And we'll move to that with Zach Fulton here. I really liked Zach Fulton after his rookie year, as anyone who listens to this show in the offseason knows. I liked what we saw from him. At guard on some level, he was fantastic at center. So there was kind of an offseason speculation kind of story of, could you put him at center, leave him there, and let Mitch Morse play a guard spot? If they don't sign Jeff Allen, that could happen. Mitch Morse was great at center, though. And what Zach Fulton allows you, that Mitch Morse also allows, and even Ja Reed, the Chiefs and Patriots fans, especially those two teams more than any others that I can think of, saw how an injured offensive line affects a season. Fulton, as a guard, center, guard, backup talent, is a pretty fantastic luxury because he's better than that. He could start at center for plenty of the NFL. He started at center for the Chiefs and was good. If you're afraid of Ben Grubbs and you don't want to sign Jeff Allen, you could either put Fulton at a guard spot or let Morse, if you think Morse is a better guard than Zach Fulton, which he might be, put Fulton at center and put Morse at either guard spot. I get it. I do. That makes sense. But offensive linemen get hurt all the time. And if you have the flexibility of Ja Reed at either guard spot or Ja Reed at either tackle spot, Fulton at center or guard, and then you bring in another right tackle, you're putting together a heck of an offensive line there. You want to put Laurent Duvernay-Tardif at right guard for the future? I would not love that, but if you want to make that happen, which it seems like the Chiefs do, fine by me. I would still rather see Zach Fulton end up at that right guard spot and let LDT be the backup guy, because I think Fulton is more talented and more experienced and has a higher ceiling. But it's probably pretty close. Keep the offensive line unit together as it was last year, as closely as you can. Pay Eric Fisher long term. Pay Jeff Allen 3 years, $12 million or something like that. Keep Mitch Morse at center. Let Zach Fulton and LDT fight out for right guard. Maybe even let Ja Reed fight for that right guard spot. You've got the two losers there are going to be a heck of a backup. Ja Reed can back up the right tackle spot, draft a right tackle. That offensive line starts to really come together. And as we saw 2 years ago, as we saw this last season, bad offensive line play makes it impossible to win a game. Alex Smith got so much better when we could watch him play and go, man, look at how much he trusts his offensive line. That's incredible. He has so much more patience. He will go through his reads and then actually wait until something opens up to run, or he'll hit somebody, you know, he'll hit his third read of the play because he has faith that he's not about to get his head chopped off by whoever's rushing from behind him. Keep this offensive line together as much as you can, and if that means letting Eric Berry go, which is how football works right now, this is why the cap thing is so important, I was talking about earlier. If you can have one of the best rosters of offensive linemen, not 1-5 necessarily, but 1-8, if you can have a deep, good offensive line, and that means going with Ron Parker, Tyvon Branch, Hussein Abdullah in the back of your secondary instead of Ron Parker, Eric Berry, Hussein Abdullah, I'm okay with that because that also gives you space to keep Jay Howard on for another year and Dontari Poe's around for the 2017 or till the 2016 season. That's the kind of move where you find a few million dollars extra in your couch cushions than to also not only keep that line together, but to sign a middle-of-the-road free agent wide receiver who can come and make an impact. Look at what Eric Decker has done. I don't think he's a free agent this year, but pay that equivalent of a guy. Then you have Jeremy Maclin, Chris Conley, Albert Wilson, and, you know, basically Eric Decker, somebody you can take a little bit of risk on. And if he plays very well, he becomes Eric Decker. If he plays more poorly, he's Brian Hartline, or we saw, you know, Dwayne Bowe, to keep two Browns guys in the conversation. I know we don't want to talk about how the Chiefs move on from Eric Berry here, but to keep those guys, if you want to rank them by importance, bringing in extra weapons, keeping that offensive line together, I think those are bigger, more pressing needs than keeping Eric Berry in the back of that secondary. Because as much as I'd love to have him around, he's going to demand a pretty big number to do some stuff that the Chiefs have other guys that can fulfill that role. Go back and watch what happened in the Chiefs offense whenever Donald Stevenson was left tackle, whenever Jeff Allen was injured and gone, when Ben Grubbs was getting playing time. It was bad. And a lot of the places where the Chiefs offense started clicking more was with Jeff Allen and Eric Fisher locked on that left side, with Mitch Morse or Zach Fulton playing center, Ja Reed even playing right tackle. You've got to keep that unit together. You've got to give Alex Smith another weapon in free agency or in the draft. You probably want to keep Derek Johnson and Tom Bahali. I know I do. And the difficult reality that leads to is I don't see how Eric Berry fits into this cap for the Chiefs going forward. A guy who does fit into the Chiefs cap plans going forward because he's in it now, Travis Kelce. Ian Rappaport reported that for his 5-year, $46 million extension, Travis Kelce gets a signing bonus of just under $10 million, has a max value of $50 million. And before we get back to the numbers of that, just one second, I promise. He also caught 2 touchdowns and led the losing team in yards receiving in the Pro Bowl. Also, Marcus Peters had a pick, by the way, if you cared. Travis Kelce, also now getting a reality dating TV show. Travis Kelce's had a pretty solid week, I would say. Also, hopefully pretty soon, we'll have some news about a radio program involving that I cannot wait for, but we'll just see whenever that gets there. Back to the numbers. Travis Kelce makes him the second highest paid tight end in football. He's making a little more money than Zach Ertz just got in Philadelphia. Travis Kelce's better than Zach Ertz is. He's making less money than Rob Gronkowski. He's not as good as Rob Gronkowski is. Jordan Reed is probably going to have a new deal with Washington pretty soon. I'm going to guess it's in this neighborhood. Only $20 million of it is guaranteed, so keep that in mind because that's the number that matters more here. And I think Travis Kelce has an awfully good chance of playing out this whole contract, though. He's 26. He's improving. The tight end's position is unbelievably important in an Andy Reid offense. Yes, he has his fumbling issues, which I'm fully aware of, although please continue to remind me if you think I forget. Also, I'm seeing something on Roto-World that it's actually Jimmy Graham who's paid more, which makes me wonder whenever Rob Gronkowski's deal is up. But $20 million or so guaranteed, hugely important to this offense. I can't even fathom how someone could argue this is a bad contract. If you want to roll through an Andy Reid offense with James O'Shaughnessy and Demetrius Harris as your two tight ends, God be with you. I don't. I'd rather have one of the top 3, 4, 5 tight ends at worst. At worst, he's a top 5 tight end. I think his ceiling, right now, at worst, he's a top 5 tight end in football right now. At best, his ceiling, I think, is unbelievably high. So I'm fully okay with this contract for Travis Kelce. Let's wrap up the show with a few bits of news. The Chiefs interviewed Ohio State wide receiver Braxton Miller at the Senior Bowl. I think that's interesting. I think we're going to see a few big names and a few smaller names really start to overtake the Chiefs as far as bringing in weapons in this draft. We'll talk draft as we get closer. There's some mock drafts out early that I'm not going to waste time on right now, but we'll get to it eventually. Although it seems like one position they may not have to fill is the void that was left by DeAnthony Thomas the last, half of the season. With all of his issues, never found out exactly what was going on, but I heard a few different reports from a few people that I have some faith in, and also pairing it with this tweet, they know I'm coming back on the field next year, hashtag return dat, from DeAnthony Thomas. It was not related to his concussion from a couple of things that I heard, and it it seems like it's not an issue with him wanting to play. But any report that I heard was never verified by the Chiefs or any multiple sources. So it sounds like we can expect him to be returning for next season. I think we know what Albert Wilson is. I never want to see Albert Wilson run a streak downfield ever again because it never works. But he's an okay slot receiver, a pretty solid slot receiver, I would argue. Chris Conley has a ways to go, but I think as he's in Andy Reid's system for longer and longer, he's going to continue to rise. The part of this that makes me sad is that I don't think adding either another draftee or a free agent who hasn't been with Andy Reid before is going to work very quickly. Jeremy Maclin became such a huge part of this offense immediately because he knows Andy Reid and his system. I think we're going to see Reid try to target another guy like Jason Avant. There's a pattern here. Another guy who has been with Andy Reid for a while. I will look into who that might end up being. Right now, I don't know. I'm just spitballing. But I think we see a veteran who's been with Andy Reid before and another young option, and this offense starts to build up a little bit, hopefully including DeAnthony Thomas. Ed Werder tweeted that Johnny Manziel, who is not going to be with the Browns next year because he's also been tracked by a police helicopter lately. I mean, it's a mess. Manziel has told people the Cowboys, Rams, and Chiefs are interested in him. The Rams had draft interest. The Chiefs have none, per Ed Werder. Johnny Manziel is a train wreck, and the Browns don't want him, and he doesn't want Cleveland. I don't think he's going to LA. I think that would be a disaster. Going to an established coach, Andy Reid, would make a little bit of sense, and it would be crazy low risk as far as money goes. Johnny Manziel might not get a dollar of guaranteed money if he ends up anywhere at all. He desperately needs an opportunity to basically sit down and be quiet. If he can prove he can do that, then maybe his talents become useful again. But with the mess he's been in Cleveland, which was begging to give him the starting job, you want desperately to get a spark from Johnny Manziel. Manziel never justified it. He was a head case the whole time. Bringing him in to Andy Reid working with Johnny Manziel feels like a great situation for Johnny Manziel. But the ceiling for the Chiefs, I can't imagine being that high, the potential of bringing him in. Because even if he's a great soldier behind Alex Smith for 1 year, and then you let Alex Smith go, and I cannot feel good about giving Johnny Manziel the keys to the Chiefs franchise. I mean, I might rather give him to Tyler Bray or Aaron Murray, guys who are far less talented, who I feel like just have their head on straight. Also, I'm really interested to see if the Chiefs go in with another quarterback or if they try to make Tyler Bray that third guy this year and make Aaron Murray that second guy. That's a super, like, middle-of-the-offseason discussion to have, but I'm actually really excited to see what the Chiefs end up doing there. Another interesting report came out that Peyton Manning has told some friends he's planning to retire after the Super Bowl. A report came out last night or today, I can't remember. I'm recording this on Wednesday morning, which is when I'm hopefully going to continue to record these throughout at least my school semester. So for that much of the offseason, hopefully Wednesday morning, or the shows will come out Wednesday afternoon. Adam Schefter tweeted that the Rams have had internal discussions about bringing Peyton Manning to LA should he want to play another season. I would actually kind of love that. I'd love to see Peyton Manning have another season where I could kind of root for him a little bit, not with Denver. I hope he loses by 50 in the Super Bowl because I want the Broncos to lose by 50 in the Super Bowl. I hate Peyton Manning in Denver. Outside of Denver, I don't really have a super strong feeling on it. Him being the first quarterback of the new LA Rams for 1 year would be bizarre and really interesting. I don't even know if I'm happy about the fact that it sounds like he's done in Denver. Because I don't know if he's any good. I don't know. I don't think Brock Osweiler is a good quarterback. I think their defense is incredible. Or has been very, very good at the absolute worst. I don't think the Broncos are going to give the keys to the car to Brock Osweiler. I don't think they want Peyton Manning to come back next year. I don't know what I want as a Chiefs fan, but I can't wait to watch, and I hope it's crazy and a disaster for the Broncos, because I'm really sick of dealing with them. But Peyton Manning going to LA would be a heck of a story. Hopefully I can make up for the fact that this show took a little more than a week by giving you almost an hour in this episode, which I did not predict to do. There were some really interesting takes in the comment section of the last podcast, and some of them, like, I'm just now seeing as I scroll through. There were a lot of comments on this episode. I can't see them because the counter's not working. I can't see how many there were, which is too bad. Oh, there were 44. Okay, so some of these I just kind of want to look over. Like, the idea that the Chiefs played scared and Denver showed the NFL how to pressure Gronk and Brady. No, the Chiefs weren't, and someone responded, and I appreciated this. I don't think the Chiefs were scared. I think Bob Sutton didn't move to a man, to a press defense on the outside, getting in the face of the receivers, didn't adjust well enough. What we saw from the Broncos against the Patriots is we saw how you should be playing against the Patriots' offense. And at home, the Broncos were able to do it at home. The Chiefs had to do it on the road. I think the Chiefs could have still taken care of the Patriots in New England, but the defense didn't adjust well enough. And this is another one that made me groan. It's from a commenter that I usually agree with most of the time. But the playoff win showed what the team could do. The playoff loss showed how far we are from dominating in the NFL. Great defense, decent special teams, non-elite offense. Pretty simple. Somehow keep the defense, save for some special teams, and give Alex Smith a great supporting cast, or he is so much chopped liver. This game was not about Alex Smith! God! Please! This was not an Alex Smith issue! I mean, Alex Smith had like half of Jeremy Maclin, and the offense still did most of what we wanted from it. The defense had no Justin Houston. The scheme ended up being terrible. Bob Sutton's scheme was terrible. Terrible. Especially, and did not adjust in the second half at all. This is not an Alex Smith issue. And then somebody else said, if not for Alex doing his magic playoff thing, the Chiefs would have been utterly destroyed in that game. And I actually agree with it. Some of these comments are actually pretty interesting, and some of them drive me insane. This isn't a bad comment, but I think it misses a point a little bit, saying that, quote, we lost the game because we were down to a third-string running back, third-string outside linebacker, fourth-string return man, third-string safety. They cannot keep up with the receiver. The Patriots can go blow for blow with the amount of injuries, especially with running backs. And the Chiefs didn't lose because of that. I mean, not having Justin Houston was enormous, obviously. But the Patriots had a ton of injuries also. You couldn't get pressure on Brady because he threw the ball on an average of 2 seconds. You couldn't cover the guys because they were getting the ball so quickly. You've got to bump the receivers. And then a couple of Broncos fans commented. I'm just going to ignore it. I'd say thanks for listening to the show. Chiefs played not to lose. Scared. Didn't pressure. Didn't block. Sad. Stop it. Come on. It's not... You're in the playoffs in New England. I don't think it's possible to play scared there. You understand the odds are against you. You couldn't pressure him because he threw the ball in 2 seconds. The offensive line did just as well as it could have. You can't get pressure, not because of even the pass rushers. I think Holly and Dee Ford could have gotten there if they would have had the time to actually get to Brady, but Brady was able to get rid of the ball immediately in every instance because no one was bumping the receivers. Tom Brady's timing never got knocked off. Tom Brady's timing was always exactly what he wanted it to be. Thanks for listening to the Rough and Kicker podcast on Arrowhead Addict. I'm Joshua Briscoe. I really love doing this show. Sometimes comments make me yell. That's okay. I'm going to hopefully continue to try to put these shows out, as I said, on Wednesdays. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. Look for Roughing the Kicker, not the RTK section of Arrowhead Addict Radio, because it's not working right now. Patreon.com/RTK. You can help support the show financially. I really appreciate that. You can leave a review on iTunes. Apparently that helps. I don't know why. My name is Joshua Briscoe. I'm on Twitter at JB Briscoe. Tell me what you want to hear from this show during the off season. Questions, ideas, suggestions of any sort. You can Facebook message me also. Facebook.com/RTK show. I have a lot of hours to fill this offseason about non-real football games, so I'm happy to look into any subject you can come up with. Speaking of real football games, I'll take the Panthers 24-17 over the Broncos. I'd love to pick a bigger blowout. I think it's possible, but the Broncos defense has been really good. I'm tired of underrating them, but I don't think I'll be able to do enough, which would be great, because I don't want to have to watch the Broncos win a Super Bowl. Thanks for listening, as always. Goodbye, Mom!
Excuse me, sir, but could you drop the bass?